the world's burning down because $20 billion to Argentina. Apparently.
That's where our problems start and end.
That's where everything starts and ends right there.
Javier Milei is afuera for bailouts in Washington, D.C. this week. Did I pronounce that right?
I just don't know if it's used there.
Right? I'm not sure if it's used correctly.
He's out. He's out and about looking for a bailout, right? Afuera. That means it's out.
I guess
like,
in that
you throw
way.
It out. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's okay. What I was going for.
Right. I always kind of just think of him being like, afuera.
Yeah.
Like on the board where it's like, you're fired kind of a thing.
Yeah,
so.
But he wasn't saying you're fired. He was saying you're out. So he's like, out.
I mean, people might be out. There's an election coming up.
We'll see.
He's not out, but like his party, maybe.
Welcome back to Human Reaction. We are talking about Argentina's bailout. Is it a bailout? What is it? What's happening with Argentina? And we haven't talked about it in a minute since his election, and we covered that when that happened. So we're going to check in with how things have been going with the chainsaw president, as well as this new recent story that's in the news this week about him going to Trump and asking for a bailout, if that's indeed what it is.
Well, the internet seems to be telling me that it's like the end of Western civilization or something. I don't know. Yeah. Apparently, this is awful. Like,
it sounds terrible.
Apparently, it sounds awful.
In general, people are pissed off at bailouts, right? Yeah. You know, they're thinking this is like bailing out the big banks in 2008. Right?
I think there's a messaging error that's happening in here, and people are taking it and running with it because it's not really what everybody's saying it is.
So if you want to find out, you got to stick around. While you do that, don't forget to like and subscribe to this video. Leave a comment. Let us know what you think. And let's get started.
Okay. So what has happened here? Actually, maybe even before, it's worth noting he was here for Charlie Kirk's Medal of Freedom.
He came up for that?
Yeah. He was like in like the front row at it.
And
Trump even mentioned him during the ceremony of being like, we have a great leader from Argentina, came all the way here. He begged me to be here for this event.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa. Crazy.
Yeah, well, and that's also noteworthy is I remember, wasn't it Milei and Elon Musk that came out with a chainsaw at a Turning Point event last year?
Was that right?
Yeah, like
I remember
Milei came
that.
And,
I didn't realize it was a Turning Point.
Yeah, Milei like gifted Elon a chainsaw. And I'm pretty sure that was, or maybe it was at CPAC. That might have been CPAC.
I definitely remember.
I remember Charlie being involved in it in some way. Like there was like a video of them backstage or something.
Huh. But no, I don't know. I don't remember that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean it. Mm-hmm. So was he up for that, or this is a second trip?
I think that they were just all part of the same thing.
All part of the line. Yeah, while he's up, he's like, hey, I'll loan a brother some cash. You got $20 billion in your pocket?
Yeah. Well, and actually, the Treasury did.
Hey, man.
Because the Treasury has a fund for that.
Oh, really?
You're broke!
We're not broke. Well, yes, we are.
Kyle, it was CPAC.
Yeah, CPAC.
There we go.
Yeah, I think it was like, Charlie like brought them in together and it was like a whole thing, if I remember right.
So that's what happened this week is he was up, he's up for that thing. And then him and Trump did a meeting where the Treasury had already committed $20 billion to help secure the peso, the Argentinian peso. And the short of that, basically we're buying pesos with American treasuries, right?
Sort of. Like, it's more of a swap scenario to inject liquidity when necessary if there's problems that arise.
Okay.
Like, it's not necessarily like it's like temporary currency swaps.
Yeah, okay.
Which is kind of a standard financial procedure that exists between exchange markets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just having the liquidity there in case there's a problem that arises is like a very normal phenomenon in exchange markets.
And then afterwards, Trump and his genius, he then promises $20 billion more in financial support from the Treasury if the election that's coming up goes that way. And we do have this interesting upcoming election in Argentina.
It's in 10 days. It's October 26th.
Coming
10
up
days
soon.
From when we're recording now. Which in a lot of, it's a midterm election. So Milei is not up for election, but like the Senate and Congress, whatever they're called in Argentina, are up for it. It's like one third of the one third of the Senate is up and like half of the Congress or something is up for election.
Huh.
And Argentina's going through their first time right now. They're having major election changes where it's compulsory voting. They're having no primaries.
So wait, take a step back. So earlier this year,
Democrats?
Earlier this year, there was a election reform bill that was passed through the legislature.
I think through executive powers, like emergency powers.
Really?
Yeah. It's been trying to be put through since like 2016, if I remember right.
Okay.
And Millet like put it through with emergency powers. So
right. Because they have passed all these bills that give him authority to cut the budget in order to balance the budget again. Yeah. Right.
And just when I was doing like a very cursory look at these election changes, it's something like it's saving $100 million for Argentina with the election processes. They're doing things like, I guess in the past, every party had their own ballot and it was very manipulatable with like stolen ballots from given parties and things like that. Now everything's on one uniform ballot. So everybody has the same ballot, no matter which region you're in. Like it's a much more standardized process rather than the convoluted mess that it apparently was before, which given South American politics, you might expect there's probably shenanigans that exist there. It's like a universal paper ballot system. Apparently, it's compulsory for everybody between the ages of 18 and 70 to vote.
Really?
I don't know about that. That's kind of weird to me, but it is what it is.
It's pretty. A lot of democracies have that. Yeah. Honestly, good or bad. That's just how it is.
Just strange. Like, I don't know the enforcement of it. So there's this whole new.
If you haven't voted, you're going to jail. Is that a weird process?
I don't know. Like I don't know. Is there fines associated with not voting? I don't know. Yeah. But apparently, that's what it is. But my understanding is the current polling right now is the elections are very close, but Milei's party has the edge in the moment. Mm. But it's like quite tight, and it could really go any way of who has the most power in their Congress and Senate.
Yeah, and as far as the background to this is that's why it happened in the first place, is that there was some early local elections that recently happened that signaled that Milei's party might be weak, thus a run on the peso of people who had invested early on, hoping that, you know, Milei would be able to turn around Argentina. So they wanted in early while the prices were low to then. And then they have been going through a process of rather than going into dollarization, which was kind of originally what the pitch was, it kind of been about currency stabilization and therefore currency strength. Mm-hmm. And so if you buy early in that process, the peso increases in value. You can then sell it and make a profit. A lot of those investors started pulling out. The Central Bank of Argentina had to do major purchases in order to try to stabilize. And then the Treasury had to step in because it was getting kind of disastrous.
Yeah, the Treasury is very low, and that's where a lot of the problems are right now. And that's honestly to be kind of expected with the deregulation and all those efforts, as you'd probably expect in the short term, the Treasury being kind of low.
Well, yeah, and he's cutting the budget, right? Yeah. He's cutting their federal spending.
Which... Right? And that's what this money is designed for, is to be kind of a backstop. It's like an insurance policy. And one of the big things with America is my understanding is the American banking infrastructure has about like $200 billion worth of assets in like South American like finance, like assets and things like that. So like if there was a contagion that were to occur because of a fire sale with the peso that happened, that contagion would probably spread and probably affect even our economy, like $50 billion or so. So it's almost like this is a $20 billion insurance policy in a sense that's a loan, like it's interest backed. So like Argentina's paying us for the money over time.
Over time, but they're getting that initial liquidity and we get the benefit of also buying in the peso when it's cheap.
Yes.
So if it pays back larger, then we have the opportunity. Beyond that, but I want to sit there just for a minute, because one of the stories that was larger on this that a lot of people were drawing from was a Wall Street Journal story that basically made the case that this is another example of like Trump and what they call the Trump dump, right? Where he like tries to engage in another country's dialogue, and then it ends up actually becoming worse for him, because the response to Trump kind of saying, if your party wins, then we'll do another billion, is it kind of look like extortion. So Scott Bessent then walked that back and said, no, we don't really mean that. What we mean, as long as the policy change continues in a positive direction where we can actually get repaid for this, then we're doing that. We think Milei is the best way.
The only real way that this money, this loan is bad for America is if Argentina defaulted.
Yeah.
Because that would mean that they're not paying it back.
Right.
But the loan is getting paid back over time with interest.
Right. And Argentina has defaulted on loans in the past, IMF loans. And so that like skepticism is warranted to the degree that you can see that. But also, like, what else are you going to do? Argentina's been a basket case for like forever, right? Like
50 years.
Yeah. So it's been a very long time with a lot of socialists doubling down on this big government policies to try to fix things. You had the first guy to actually take it a different direction. And, you know, we'll dig into it in a minute, but having good results in many ways and you're over here and you're saying like, it does seem reasonable to say like, hey, we might go further if you continue in a policy direction that means we might get paid back. Any bank would do that, right? It's like if you take a loan to somebody from a bank and they're like, well, I'm thinking about quitting my high paying regular job and becoming a barista. Right. And the bank was like, maybe not. Maybe your liquidity would go down and our willingness to loan to you would go down if you made less money and made less wise decisions.
Well, and that's kind of the thing is the IMF always has these strings attached with all the money. And it's like you will have these types of regulatory structures and things like that that are kind of part and parcel with the dynamic. Mm. And this money is bypassing that. And instead of going through like 2 years of meetings and it's just being like, and then you have to adopt ESG scores because of the Davos elite says that you have to, that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. like, we got to make sure you have the correct green energy programs. It's more so just like, hey, we like what you're doing here with the future direction of your country. Here's a little backstop just to make sure that everything goes smoothly. It's more like that. And just right. like, and screw off European elites with all your financial schemes. Mm. Like that's my read on what I'm seeing there.
And we were talking about this before, but we should go over this for the audience. Why do you see the IMF as a European actor?
It's more so it's like so the IMF 25% of their vote share is from the EU and like 16% of it is from the US. So there's already that power discrepancy. Mm. Like the IMF is, I don't know, it's like 100 and however many countries are all part of the International Monetary Fund. So there's like a tremendous amount of sway, but I also think that there's just a tremendous amount of ideological capture that exists within this, like a lot of these international bodies, not just the IMF,
right.
that comes from that like Davos elite, kind of the Larry Fink, BlackRock, ESG stuff, mm-hmm. you know, the Klaus Schwab stuff, which is, I guess is the Davos elite. Like all of those have capture over these international bodies like this that right. do these financial schemes. And also it's just ever since basically the British Empire, the European banking network is the most powerful financial regime that exists in the world.
It's kind of like the global financial incumbent, if you will. Now, there's some other places you can go if you are a country trying to break out of that. You could pretty much either go to that, you can go to the US, or you can go to China. Those are your options, mm-hmm. right? And so Argentina is deciding to go with China. And that's been really clear since the very start of Milei's bid for presidency is that he wants to align closer with America and closer with the kind of ideals of America when it comes to a limited government, balanced budgets, and, you know, a restrained role in administrating of the economy.
Also worth noting is Europe is the second biggest trading partner to Argentina, Brazil being the first. Mm. So there's also that, like the relationship between the Europeans and Argentina have always been tightly knit. Mm. And I think that's probably where a lot of the commie socialist policies come from is mm-hmm. kind of that stuff. So now what we're seeing in the South America is America's exerting a lot more influence in the South American countries right now. And Argentina could be kind of that shining beacon, like that shining beacon on the hill for Argentine policy for the future of
South America,
where it feels like at least the Trump admin is trying to push our influence in the South American like sphere. Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, we also have another $20 billion being organized by Scott Bessent in private capital to act as an additional backstop, which is also interesting, right? Because that's not novel for the federal government to do. It's done before. Actually, it traces itself back to a lot of the initial bailouts in the Hoover administration was actually organized privately. Mm-hmm. We have other bailouts that have happened within internal domestic policy to do this. I'm not aware of any other example of that happening internationally. It could be there. I'm not sure. But you do have an interesting phenomena of kind of Wall Street capital elite also being organized by Bessent to also taking care of the Argentinian money supply, making the bet that this election goes the way they think it will and Milei continues to strengthen the peso.
Well, and that's one of the important things about the story itself of the election is that this election really is a do Argentinians like Milei's philosophy mm-hmm. on governance? Yeah. Like, are they still down with it after his election and getting in? That is what this election is about. Mm-hmm. And, like in a lot of ways, Trump's kind of incentivizing of like, there's kind of like a carrot and stick here of just being like, you like it, don't you? Let's just tip the scales a little bit here.
Well, I mean, having a financial crisis right before an election is bad for democracies, right? They tend to vote against whoever's in power, period, because of economic suffering happened at the time. That's why, you know, Milei got into the position he was in, right? Is because there was such radical inflation at the time when he first came in. In fact, let's go into the inflation numbers and see how he's been able to pull that back.
So
this shows that. This is just over the last year. Let's go to the 5-year. Yeah, so that gives you a good sense of it. You know, since he comes in 23, so right as things are really starting to rocket off. Now, obviously, we're down below the baseline now in inflation rate in Argentina. But if you mouse over to 2023, just so it's clear, kind of November of that year, go up to the November. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're at 160. He comes in and starts putting in reforms to try to cleanse out all the excess money out of the system and bring things out of the black market into the clear market. Because when you're at 160% inflation, a lot of things are going to happen outside the market system, right? You're going to deal in dollars, not pesos. You're going to do all kinds of other things in order to try to avoid your money being, you know, disappearing before your eyes every day. So it obviously peaks up at 270 and now
292.
Oh, wow.
April 2024.
Yikes. Yeah. Imagine that. And now see where it's at now?
Now we're at 31.8.
Yeah, much, much lower.
I seem to remember, because I remember right after Milei was elected, inflation numbers like in the first month weren't good, and everybody was like, see, it's awful. Yeah. Like, it's just like, these things take time.
Even
like, there's
6 months
lag effect that comes with policy.
Okay, that's the thing that bothers me about so much of this, is because so much of the criticism is like, why could they not, you know, fix this immediately? How could they possibly, you know? When they've been dealing with, you know, the lowest is 60% or below 50% inflation. 30% inflation is like their median.
Yeah, look at over these years, 50%, 40%, 30%, 50%, you know, all the way up into the craziness that was 2024, 2023.
Yeah. And obviously some of that's the COVID regime too. I mean, like a lot of that probably took off from the policies from 2020 to 2022 globally that flushed the global system with all kinds of liquidity. And then it has inflationary spikes everywhere. We're seeing it across the globe. And then for the budget deficit, obviously during this time, they were printing dollars like mad. And the next tab. Yeah, go down. Got a good graph Sweet there.
Deficit zero. Is this the graph you're looking at?
Yeah. So this is him. He had a massive budget deficit that when he came in 23, and he's been able to pull it into a very consistent surplus.
Yeah, and it's going to take some time for the fruits of this to really be shown in their fullest, I think, too. Mm-hmm. Which is why you kind of, in my opinion, they're like the backstop almost feels necessary in a sense. Just like having that extra backstop there on the treasury is useful, especially if there was some sort of major crisis that occurred.
Mm-hmm. Especially just from a financial panic based upon election news, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like the fundamentals are bad. So is the question, it can be twofold, right? Is it okay to bail out other countries? Leaving that aside, is this a good bet from Bessent on using a fund that already exists that is meant for this purpose to be used in this case? And it seems reasonable, especially if you look at the GDP numbers. On the next one, I think we have a solid case there, right? So this is the GDP, and then that's just for this year. Yeah,
yeah, let me look at 5-year.
You know, like the GDP was on a decline, and now it's starting to crawl up again.
And just this deficit here, this is in the same time frame as the crazy inflation numbers that we were just looking at before,
right?
2013 or 2023 to 2024.
And it's important to note, sometimes GDP can actually look higher in inflationary moments. So if you have shrinking GDP while you have shrinking GDP while you have high inflation, that's really bad for your economy, right? Because GDP is just measuring number go up, right? Like the amount of goods and services being sold. So if you have increases prices for those goods and services, it can appear like things are better than they are. So when you have GDP numbers adjusted for inflation that have that problem, you're in a real bad spot. So obviously coming out of that means something was working. That doesn't give you a sense of what happened with the deregulation, though. So I did have this Cato article that I think does a good job explaining. If you go down a bit, there's a section on that. You'll look for it. So for example, Argentina's extensive rent control system he ended that, and that resulted in a supply of apartments in Buenos Aires, for example, a tripling of their supply with a 30% drop in price. Yeah, you might have missed it.
I don't know exactly what
it's
you're
a bullet pointed site right there.
Oh,
there
this section here?
Yeah, right there. So there's that. So there's also the new open skies policy, the permissions for small airplane owners to provide transportation services within Argentina led to an increase in the number of airline services and routes operating within, to, and from the country. Now, what I'm saying is, like, the deregulation had tremendous opportunities for people on the ground, because this is what the economy is, folks. The economy is the ways in which we solve each other's problems. And what it did is allow people to rent apartments that they otherwise couldn't rent, and build more, and then fly people around. And then, like, for example, for internationally, letting in Starlink provided a lot of areas in the country to get internet for the very first time. That's a big deal, because the internet does solve problems for people. I know it has lots of downsides, but it also, people tend to get on the internet because it does solve problems for them. Knowledge problems, mostly.
This is an interesting one. Over-the-counter medicines can now be sold not just by pharmacies, but by other businesses as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then you have online sales of medicines, which also, the price drops from it.
Mm-hmm. And then the
less of monopoly on it.
And then he's also repealing their nationalist BS laws, right? So the government repealed the Buy Argentina law, similar to Buy American laws. And it repealed laws that required stores to stock their shelves according to specific rules governing which products by which the companies and nationalists could be displayed, nationalities could be displayed, in which order and which proportions.
A lot more competition just in general, mm-hmm. which naturally drives prices down.
A 20% drop in the price of clothing. 35% drop in the price of home appliances from eliminating the import licensing scheme. So just getting the government out of the way created these massive opportunities for people on the ground to live better lives by having things they could apply or buy be more affordable.
Hmm. Interesting. Which, yep. And just the downstream effects, if that stuff continues, those inflation numbers are going to continue coming down, because 30 is still crazy.
Yeah, and the GDP numbers go up, right? But that's the... And that's always been the challenge, right? Is like, how do you take an economy that's had this long-term struggle and do something radical to try to bring it onto a better path and then sustain that over time? In a democracy, it's tough, because there's all kinds of reasons why people vote different ways. There's also like a corruption scandal going on with Milei's sister. I'm not sure how real that is.
Is that with the Libra coin?
I don't stuff? Know.
Right. Yeah. Well, we covered it. We covered that on the Skiff back when it happened. Mm-hmm. I had followed the Libra stuff.
Yeah. So it's a strange challenge that we're in terms of, you know, is in terms of that question, but in terms of the question is, should Scott Bessent do this? Is this a good call for the U.S. Treasury to make that call? It seems like to me a completely reasonable call.
Well, it's also worth noting that that this money comes out of the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is a specific fund within the Treasury that has buttloads of money in it that is specifically meant for stabilizing international markets. Mm-hmm. And this is money that's not appropriated from Congress. So it's not like this is something that Congress is voting on that's just like, hey, here's free money. Like, this is a particular fund that is designed to do this. And like, the profits in this fund come from people paying back interest. It comes from gold profits. It comes from all sorts of things. And this fund is designed for the executive branch and the Treasury to have the flexibility of being able to do this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, because I think a lot of people have this like conception, like this misconception that it's just like coming directly from taxpayer dollars in this moment right now. Like, it's not. This is a separate bucket of cash.
If you watch Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor, yeah, that's what his impression, he would have given you that impression. He would have misled you into thinking that he was somehow violating the government shutdown and taking money out of the general budget.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
and
not
then
what
giving
it is.
That's not what it is. That's not.
It's like every podcast seems to think that's what it is, too.
I will bet like, you money thing. That whatever program this is, Chuck Schumer was there to vote for it. I haven't even authenticated that, but I will bet money on it.
He probably
voted for it. Right. But it's just another, it's just the politics are more important than reality phenomena that we talk about here all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same thing like the Fed swap lines. So like what the Fed swap lines are is that it's like this financial scheme to create an exchange of assets. It's not like a printing of new money or anything like that. Because I also saw a lot of people thinking that there's like money printing going on or something with it. No, it's just like an exchange of assets that allows for foreign banks to trade their local currency for USD very quickly. In order to provide lending to their local institutions during any type of liquidity shortage that might exist. Mm. Like it's kind of a backstop that you would expect in normal markets to have, is to be able to have this liquidity fund there. Because markets do get unstable. Like when there's like quick shock and awe moments, or there's like drastic geopolitical shifts that happen or something like that, that creates a lot of uncertainty in markets. And like, this is just a buffer for that, so that there's not just all of a sudden just like, oh, there's no money in the banks and everybody's running out with it. Like it just creates that safe reserve there to create more confidence in a market. And you would like, it's one of these things where I'm kind of surprised that it wasn't already in place.
Like with Argentina specifically.
Yeah. Like I was kind of like, when I looked at it, I was like kind of baffled. I'm like, oh, I kind of would have expected those Fed swap lines to have already existed.
Well, they already exist in other banks, right? Mm-hmm. They already exist for like German banks or exactly. Japanese banks or something like that. So why not Argentina? Well, it's probably because they've been more closely aligned with Europe so far.
Probably.
They haven't been a partner.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure on that, but I would actually suspect that's probably the case there. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where I think, because people don't know the mechanics of what's going on behind the scenes with this, everybody's kind of jumping to wild conclusions about what this is. And it's not really that. Mm-hmm.
So when Trump was asked, they did like a lunch. It's weird. I would hate to be president, right? Because like they sit down for a lunch and they have all the press gaggle there mm-hmm. to ask them questions while they have their plates in front of them. You know, it's such a weird thing. I don't understand why they do it that way.
Never order hot food.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, he's just getting a Big Mac, the president.
That's what he wants. Yeah. He just wants his Big Mac and his Coca-Cola.
So nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. All right. So let's get the words of the president on what his specific interest is in this bailout.
Specific interest in economic terms for the state.
I do have. No, I want to see it succeed. I think it's going to be great, and we will benefit also. But it's not that big a benefit because it's not that big a country, but it's a very important country. And it's a country that can be very successful. There are some countries that will never be successful. This is a country that has great potential if it has the right leadership. And you have the right leadership with this man right here. Okay?
Mr. President, would you support dollarization?
I would say that I'll leave that up to my...
I don't understand the question.
I like the dollar. I'm very strong on the dollar. And anybody who wants to deal in dollars, they have an advantage over people that aren't. But for the most part, we're keeping it that way. I think if Biden would have, you know, Biden, that group would have gotten elected, meaning Kamala, you wouldn't have the dollar as your currency anymore. You wouldn't have a world domination by the dollar if I didn't win this election. And now the domination, like BRICS, I told anybody wants to be in BRICS, that's fine, but we're going to put tariffs on your nation. Everybody dropped out. They're all dropping out of BRICS. BRICS was an attack on the dollar. And I said, you want to play that game, I'm going to put tariffs on all of your product coming into the U.S. They said, like I said, we're dropping out of BRICS. And BRICS is like, they don't even talk about it anymore. Scott, do you want to add to that?
We're very happy with the current currency arrangement.
Yeah, that's a much more diplomatic answer. But I thought the first classic. Part of that answer was classic Trump, like it's a great country, we could do it, you know. And then the second part was actually what's going on, which is much more about creating a zone of control that is America within the hegemony, like saying like Argentina's now, or I want them to be a client state and we want to bring them in as a client state. We want to make sure that everyone's dealing in dollars because that's the strength that allows us to run our deficits and have our empire. These sorts of things are what's there, right? And I, you know, as much as I sympathize with, you know, the strict business case of Bessent making this move or the need for liquidity, you could visualize a much more restrained America that still has a fund like this in order to help out other nations and then get repaid for that. Sure. I'd prefer it as an act of Congress, but also, you know, they've delegated this authority away, so that is what it is. Has our countries dropping out of BRICS?
One thing I'll say on that, because like everybody is going crazy about the gold boom that's happening right now, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are attributing it to a failing dollar, and that's not my read on the history there. It actually has to do way more with BRICS on why gold's going crazy, because I was looking at the numbers, and about 70% of the gold year to date, the buying pressure that's been put on it has been coming from Asian and Middle Eastern countries right now. Yeah. And it's largely the BRICS countries that are buying up tons of gold right now. You know, like there's definitely retail stuff, and probably more so than you would expect because of thing because of apps like Robinhood and stuff like that. And so it's like really easily accessible ETFs and things like of that nature. But a lot of the gold boom right now is largely because of the BRICS countries buying it up.
It has nothing to do with the government shutdown. We're still shut down, by the way.
Yeah,
you forget.
I think that narrative is driving American retail investment, but that's not actually like that's kind of like a narrative happening after the fact of gold boom that was already in the works. And then that's adding like fuel on to the gold prices. And when I'm looking at like the 200-day moving average or something like that, or any kind of standard factors that you would use for technical analysis on markets, I would suspect gold's probably going to go higher, but like in 6 to 8 months' time, there's going to be a bubble that pops and it'll come down to a more reasonable price again.
So there is one country that's leaving BRICS.
Which one?
Argentina.
Well,
and they were like,
that puts a lot more context in there.
They got invited.
Yeah, and then they withdraw their invitation.
That puts a little extra context.
But I don't know if he actually, I mean, the way he made it sound like was like India was pulling out of BRICS or something like that.
None of the main countries have dropped out.
None of them would.
Yeah.
It is worth noting in the BRIC structure right now is, this is something that I imagine we'll probably talk about next week, but a lot of movement going on with Russia as of today. Trump had a long phone call with Putin, and they are now organizing a meeting in Budapest.
I heard that.
With Viktor Orban. Alongside, Trump has a meeting in D.C. with Zelensky tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So it'll be curious, just speaking of BRICS. And one of the things he very specifically said on his tweet talking about it was a big topic of conversation is future trade with Russia. So that in itself is promising.
Zelensky going to wear a suit?
I doubt it. He's not really that kind of guy. He's got to keep up his public image as a homeless Ukrainian.
Frontline fighter.
But you can make the case that a lot of this stuff is in service of the larger question. Like Argentina being a player in a larger battle going on between these currencies and between the kind of economic power centers of the world. And even if you're an economic nationalist, you could understand why you would be like, we're going to invest in Argentina so that we could then bring them into our sphere of influence and outside of the opponents, right? So, and that's why it was so confusing to me to watch Breaking Points this week. And there in Sagar's interpretation of this, because he's such a strong economic nationalist, I don't understand why he can come to this conclusion other than his pure hatred of libertarianism as an idea and his taking this opportunity to just dump on it. So I thought we'd review that.
Is that your assessment? It's just he hates libertarianism, so there he goes.
You tell me if I'm wrong here. Tell me.
Allow you to do whatever you want. Argentina has figured out the Israeli model where you can claim rigid and individual capitalism and the savior of your economy as long as you always have the fallback of a bailout from the United States of America.
Argentina is going to have to go occupy Venezuela.
Oh, there, yes.
Like, that's
yes,
part of the deal.
Well, Argentinian occupation.
They're going to be our aircraft carrier in South America.
Argentinian occupation, of course, in no way fits with their history. Isn't that right? No. I just pissed off a whole lot of people down in South America, didn't I?
That's a Nazi joke. Yeah. So
I get it. It took me a second.
It was a deep cut. And I'll give him credit for that.
That's a pretty good cut, actually.
I was actually wondering if that is why Argentina has historically been so aligned with Europe. It's because of their European immigration post-World War II.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Because I looked it up. And it's actually mostly Italians. The population of Argentina that has Italian heritage is between 47% and 62%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's the same with Brazil and Portugal and other, that like they're speaking the languages that they speak because of their colonial history. And in addition to that post-war period, there was a lot of investment in a lot of those countries. Some of them became very nice countries. Argentina was a very nice country. It was one of the top GDP countries in the world at one point before socialism took over. So that totally checks.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing on like how deep those ties go back to the homeland in that sense. Like there's probably an ideological tie that exists there and then them trying to align themselves accordingly with that given nation. You know, it's sort of like, just in the Trump signing the order to make Indigenous Peoples Day Columbus Day, and I see the prime minister of Italy putting a big thing on it. This is a great thing for Italian Americans. And he was like, I didn't realize this was like such a big issue for Italian Americans is that it's Columbus Day.
<You're> like, yeah, exactly. So going back to this, yeah, if free markets are so good, why does Argentina need a ballot? Well, Sagar, it's probably because you have a small economy that is trying to pull itself out of, you know, about 50 years of economic nationalism and socialism that has so ruined all of the structures of the economy that it takes time to make these adjustments. And then a political bull run or political bear run on their markets has thrown all that into question. Right. So why is this needed? Well, for the many reasons. Like it's so funny because we will have absolute compassion for Venezuela in this case, right? Venezuela decided to socialize all of their industries and all these markets. And I don't think that's a good idea, but I don't think the responding policy from the federal government should therefore be let's isolate them and not trade with them and keep them a pariah on the world stage forever. Right. I think that's a bad thing. Right. But I don't have to support their economic system to think that. So why is it that there's compassion for Venezuela when they nationalize their oil markets, their oil industry, and their groceries and all these other things? But all of a sudden, when someone actually comes along and wants to liberalize and actually, you know, create some empowerment for their people to create and do things,
how dare
that
you?
All of a sudden we're like, well, you can't do this on your own. What's wrong with you? Come on, man. Like, this is a international monetary trade. It is not a bailout.
Yeah. But, well, that's the important thing. Like, to me, it's not really a bailout. Like, I don't like just free money roaming around to different countries. And this is not free money. Like,
yeah.
Argentina is paying it back. This is actually like the type of stuff I would expect the Treasury to be doing. Like, this feels to me like it falls very well within their bounds. It's like, okay, the executive branch has their geopolitical agenda. We have certain relationships with these countries. There are certain markets that will be beneficial for the future of America that we should help stabilize and allow them to kind of grow on their own. But we can create these backstops, which is like what normal financial markets do. Like, mm-hmm. these are common things that exist in financial markets. It's just like this is happening internationally.
Yeah.
So,
well, don't get me wrong. Like, if this was a private actor who saw a market opportunity
exactly.
to buy the peso at a lower price, it would be completely fine. In fact, that's one of the things Bennett is organizing. So when the Treasury
Bessent, not Bennett.
Bennett, like, sorry,
what
Bessent.
Am I doing?
Bennett, the Treasury Secretary.
Bessent, when the Treasury does it, all of a sudden now it's a bailout? That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, so at least just contending with the facts and contending with the actual, like, some amount of compassion for the actual project of Argentina in this case, I think is warranted.
I think there's a lot of propaganda coming from the Europeans that's really driving a lot of the sentiment too.
Yeah.
Like, because I think I said this up front, like, a lot of the people I dislike are all the ones telling me I should hate what's happening right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it's Intel outlets like Der Spiegel in the Netherlands and things like that. Like, all those closely aligned Davos Intel community outlets that are not liking the direction. And it reminds me a lot of Bukele in El Salvador, where he was labeled at large by all these international funds, the IMF specifically, as being this terrorist, mm-hmm. that is this dictator of El Salvador. And it's like, well, now El Salvador is doing pretty good and their crime is gone and they've beefed up their relationships with the United States, mm-hmm. unlike having strong relationships with other folks.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's more what this is going on. It's just like, are these countries being more aligned with the Americans or with a different major group on the geopolitical stage? Right. And I think that's really what's happening here.
Right, right. And we've diced up El Salvador tons of times, but I'm just struck by the competition for these smaller countries to come in within a zone of an orbit of a larger power. Mm-hmm. And if you are in that role of I'm America first and I'm an economic nationalist, this seems compatible with that because you're bringing them into your orbit. But that's why it's so frustrating to see from the attack from the right being this is not America first, this is Argentina first or something like that, right? It's just not, it's not looking at it, one, connected to the facts, and two, connected to, I think, national interest as defined, that they would define it in many different ways, you know, because this isn't like us giving money to the Israelis to buy our weapons. This is not the same thing. Right. This is not a loan. No, this is a loan.
This
is
not
a loan. Mm-hmm. Right. This so or paying Egypt to be friendly to Israel.
Yeah, it's not free money.
None of those things apply, you know, but of course, Don't let that stop you.
It's also
when dogging on libertarianism, because it's always the libertarians who always have to be the a perennial enemy of everybody for no goddamn reason.
Well, it's also worth noting too is Argentina was one of the first to the table and got one of the best trade deals in all of the restructuring that happened. Mm. They are at the exact baseline. They have no extra stuff. They Milei has promised to remove all like non-tariff trade barriers, all these things, and trying to really foster that relationship extremely well. So there's also that relationship aspect. Like there's like the diplomatic relational aspect, and like then we have this zone of very important country in the South America where we can kind of continue to spread our influence and try to make South America great again, kind of a thing. Because South America is such a hellhole, with the exception of like Peru, at this point in time, and Brazil is such a mixed bag, and they're one of the most important countries there too. And this kind of helps us have that buffer there.
Yeah, 100%. So the
it's also it's not bombing, right?
Yeah,
that's the other thing is it's not like interventions like we're gonna go invade them and flip them over and completely like restructure their entire
like what we're planning to do with Venezuela.
Yeah,
right?
It's not that type of stuff too. Or it's not like these like large scale adventurism projects that take decades.
Or even a black ops dethronement, right? Yeah. I mean like those sort of things, which is interesting because this week New York Times released an article that said that they got a leaked memo from the CIA suggesting that there is a new presidential finding, which is basically an unconstitutional order given to an unconstitutional agency to do something unconstitutional, in this case, to do operations inside Venezuela, with is pretty strongly indicated that we could be looking at alongside of the, as we talked about, I think it was last week.
I was sick last week.
You were sick. So you don't know this. Live reaction. So a couple weeks ago, the president of Venezuela accused the United States of using radical right wingers to try to stage a government coup that was then disrupted by his security forces. Right. And then so that could have been post a fact after that, or this is a new thing. And that one was actually made up. But beyond the boats we have sitting off the shore, blowing up boats in the water, we have potentially a new intervention in Venezuela. So in choice between that and bailing out a country that is being nothing but friendly to us and trying, even if that's not a bailout, loaning money to a country that needs the money for liquidity purposes seems like a much better foreign policy.
Well, and that's kind of exactly where I'm at with the Argentina thing, is that this money, there's interest payments on the loan. Like, it's not free.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of what I would expect any country to do with their allies is being like, hey, can you spot me this right here? You know, like in the same way that like businesses do this with each other. Like this is just a very common practice. Like it's the narrative around it that's so frustrating to me. Well, that's the problem.
This is the crazy thing too, is like the liberals going on to MSNBC and CNN saying, but did you know that Argentina is undermining Trump's trade war by selling soybeans to China? You know, so like they're saying like he's doing this for this person that's undermining his own trade war. Look how dumb he is been one of the narratives, because here's the story. We put tariffs on soybeans. Mm-hmm. China stops dealing with soybeans because that is a very elastic market. Now, remember way back when we were talking about the tariffs, I was like, this will be determinant upon whether or not there's an elastic market or not. If it's elastic, meaning they can find that source from another place, they will. Well, what they did is they found it in Argentina. So they started buying Argentina soybeans. That's the story. So like it could be that, or it could be maybe there's a bigger picture here, or there's other in central play, or you're balancing needs. These are all reasonable things that adults do.
Another aspect, something I found out just looking at stuff in regards to this is Argentina apparently has 20% of the lithium reserves in the globe.
Whoa. Important for batteries. Which
that is very important.
Yeah.
Elon Musk needs that.
Yeah. Get them on lithium.
Get that on the lithium side. So that's also worth noting as well, as we're looking at kind of the more real politic side of this. But yeah, overall, I don't see this as contradictory. I'm kind of neutral on the whole thing. Like, it just kind of makes sense that this would be happening. But
yeah, I'm pissed off by the media manipulation of the whole thing. And I'm really upset about the whole, let's take this opportunity to not look at the numbers of what has actually happened in Argentina, since it deregulated its markets and made its money more scarce and made its budgets realign. Let's not look at any of that. Let's instead use that opportunity to mock the very policies that would actually bring about sanity in our own government in Argentina because they had a liquidity shock. So that's how I feel about
it. I'm also anything that continues to put pressure on the pedophiles in the European governments, I'm all for. I'm
also Kyle continues his anti-France crusade. Yeah. They're the real problems,
just,
guys.
Just the EU in general. We're the way I'm seeing is like we're in this like economic war with the European with the Europeans right now, and that's not like a it's not kinetic, it's never going to be kinetic, but there's a lot of power struggles going on when it comes to central banking and trade and stuff like that, and it appears that Trump and Besant are winning that constantly, and a lot of these moves I think it's a useful lens to have when we're watching these things. Mm. Besant even said recently he had actually even mentioned the he always calls them. Our friends in Europe, but he's always tried to be extremely diplomatic, sort of like he was in that clip there. But, he gives the winks and nods to that's the type of stuff that's going on here, too. Russia themselves, they actively say that the United States and Europe are in an economic war. Hmm. All their foreign ministers are always talking about it in like speeches and things like that. So always a useful lens to have when we're talking about dominance over countries within the world, because these are all the major players, China, Europe, us, and so on.
Well, we'll see how it shakes out. So we're going to jump over to another video. Check us out. We're going to be talking about AI coming up soon. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.